Welcome to the Reformist Pipeline, your dose of empowerment and the pipeline to inform your decisions on how you can support change in our education system. This is Lindsay, affectionately known as Miss Black.
And I'm Hadi Hyde. Mr. Broussard, if you're feeling perplexed, I think is the word I'm going to go with today, honestly. Yes. And the reason being is I was kind of just in a space where I was feeling real riding high today. And then I had a lovely conversation with my lovely line brother. Shout out Harrison.
Shout out to Harrison. All these emotions
just came over me because of the police killings that have been happening. And I think that it's the first time that I was feeling so good in the sense that I did not have to face what I feel like is my reality. And what I mean by that is like last year around this time, I was in the classroom and day in and day out, I would be dealing with my students who I love, but trying to get them to realize that how Mr. Jihad treats you, how your other teachers treat you, isn't how police officers are going to perceive you. And trying to get that across to them is a challenge in itself. But this year, to be out of the classroom, it was the first time that I grappled with this idea that even, like, I'm hoping that I'm still helping, hoping that I'm still creating change, but still knowing that this is still happening. Even though I felt better in the moment, like, the emotion still came out of nowhere. It was like, it came over me. Yeah, it slapped me in the face. And it does not feel good. Even though I felt good initially, it just went to, it's just so unfortunate that we continue to murder Black people, Black women, Black men, Black children. And like, I'm curious to know, like, when is enough going to be enough? Like, what will we have to do to get people to understand that we matter as well? And we were talking about like this whole idea of why people are looting. And that's the only way that America realizes that something's wrong is when you're attacking capitalism, when you're robbing stores. And why is that? Like, why is that the only, and the fact that and the media is trying to do a better job of talking about, oh, like violence erupted and people are looting and there were peaceful protests as well. But like, great that you have this dichotomy, but like, talk about the real issue. Talk about the fact of why people are doing this.
Right.
And talk about what needs to be changed so people can stop doing this.
And at this point, there's more than enough opportunity to talk about it because all y'all been doing is talking about COVID.
It would be
nice for you to take a change. Just so the listeners are aware, we are this, if you're listening to this now, later on, you're like, wait, what happened? Like, I pray that this does not hit home at the time that this episode drops, but we are pre-recording this and we just had to get this off our chest because it does matter and it does impact the classroom. Like, being a virtual teacher right now, well, my school year is over. Like, I would have had to had a very limited duration, right? Would have found out the information sometime in the evening, would have had to prepare myself to not be so emotionally taken over that I'm unable to go to work or unable to perform. But in that time, I also have to figure out how I'm going to talk about this with my kids.
Right.
Because it can't just not be talked about. And it's even more difficult when you work in a school that's not predominantly Black. Because people that aren't Black, you know, there's no way that they can feel like sympathize is the word when it's like, I've experienced that before. Right.
Yeah.
Or it's in sometimes it's difficult in my experience for non-Black people to show compassion at a way that I need it. Like, it's more so been like, yeah, we're going to band together. We're all sad during this time. You're not sad like me.
You don't get it. Like, you don't feel it the way that I do. Because that could have easily been me. That could have easily been my brother. And, like, that's what keeps me up at night is knowing that. And that's what I feel like is even, like, even though I'm out of the classroom, like, I think about that. I think about my students, and I really wanted to, I almost, like, just went down the list of all the Black males that I taught. And I think about that because I hope that they never run into this issue. Like, that is what, that was why I taught, because knowing that they would learn something from me, and so that when that situation happens, you know how to respond. Mm-hmm. Because you know this, that there's been plenty of times in which I've been pulled over. Mm-hmm. And even with the fact that that's something that I do, like, I shake, like, I get super nervous when I'm being pulled over by the police officer, by police officers. Mm-hmm. And then that's taken as a sign of suspicion. But not really knowing that I'm nervous because I don't know, regardless of what you're putting over me, I don't know what's about to happen. I don't know what my life looks like after this moment. And so that's what I'm consciously thinking about. But you're perceiving me as if I'm about to commit a crime. And the fact that I went to a university and I probably could even have more education than you, that does not matter.
Sorry. I'm laughing because it's so true.
No, but it's real. Like, that's what is so puzzling to me is. And so that's why, you know, the hope is that you can. Education is a key to liberation, and I completely agree with that. But it's just like you still have to be very conscious, and this is why. Yeah. Like, as soon as something that like that happens, like, I'm quick. Let me call my attorney because there's nothing else that I need to do. I don't want to speak to you until after I speak to who I need to talk to make sure that I am good. That I need to. What do I need to say? Oh, okay, got it.
All right, bet. And that's one component of it. But white people need to hold white people accountable.
Absolutely.
I actually did have a conversation with a white colleague that I used to have, Goosey. She's an avid listener. But she was talking about, like, the covert racism that she saw here. And she even, like, acknowledged, like, I was part of the gentrification, really. And, like, now in hindsight, I realized that I should have been more aware. Now she's in a southern state. And she's like, oh, the racism is deeply rooted. Like, you know, what do we do? Like, what do I do? And I'm just like, because it's not, I do believe it is our job to educate people that want to be informed.
Right.
That want to be informed. Absolutely. Because there's no way they're going to really going to get the knowledge. Right. That's my opinion. But white people just got to figure it out. Like, you actually have enough pieces at this point. You have enough pieces. Absolutely. That you actually don't need to inquire with somebody specifically anymore. You just need to hold other people accountable, other white people accountable. It's as simple as having a conversation. Because the difference from me saying it, difference from you saying it, is that I'm not going to die. And I'm not going to be held by the police. Because I too have also been, they didn't even put me under arrest. I was parked and they parked their car behind my car. Right. It made it seem like it was all good. But I'm like, oh, you're racially profiling me because I have braids. Damn, that's crazy.
Right.
So it's like, as white people, the least you can do is say something.
Yeah. Because we can't say anything.
We can't.
We can't say anything. We can't flinch. We can't look. There's so many things that we can't do.
You have the liberty to do.
Absolutely. So please, that is what we request at this point. Do something, say something. That's what people are talking about, like, different strategies that officers can be doing. If you see someone killing someone, try your best to prevent it. These are human beings. Why do you think that you have that power? Like, even to where we were talking about earlier, the officer didn't even have a mask on, and you felt that innate, like, you felt that privilege, that much power that you can have your knee on another Black man's throat, that you don't even need a mask. And
you can't even get COVID.
Absolutely right. You're that invincible. That makes no sense to me.
It's wild. So we're all perplexed.
Yes.
I'm sure.
Perplexed.
Our listeners are also perplexed.
Right.
That's it. I know we hit you with some heavy but necessary stuff in our intro, but we would like to switch gears a bit and introduce you to our simply phenomenal guest, Sherea Hill. By the time this episode drops, you'll have just celebrated her golden birthday, so happy belated birthday, good sis. Ms. Hill is a Houston-bred educator and an alum of the Howard University. HU, that's a lot of HU bodies in this episode, y'all. She recently added a few letters to the end of her name when she received her master's in special education with a concentration in autism from the University of North Texas. She has experienced teaching impoverished youth in Madrid, Spain. Yes, she's internationally known. Okay. She is also a former ABA therapist for persons with disabilities with ages ranging from 4 to 28. Currently, she is a special education teacher for pre-K and kinder age students and an advocate for persons with special needs and believes that their label does not define them. We are honored to work with Sharia Hill, and I hope that you find immense value in the conversation we're going to have today. Cut the noise. If you're not tuning in to Kicking It with Key, then you are surely missing out. He is a YouTuber, self-care enthusiast, an educator, hey, a queen of unboxings, and a lupus survivor. And he is also one of my really good friends. Kicking It with Key focuses on sharing personal journeys to light the pathway for others through tips and hacks for everyday struggles. If you're interested in cutting the noise and living your very best life, tune in every other Sunday at 7 p.m. on YouTube. You can find Key on YouTube at Kian Cole. Let me spell it out for you. K-I-A-N-A-C-O-L-E. You can also find Kicking It with Key on Instagram at Kicking It with Key _. I'm going to spell that out for you too. K-I-C-K-I-N-I-T-W-I-T-H-K-I_. Join Key so you can also live your very best life. Hey, Sharia, welcome to the Reformist Pipeline, girl.
Hey, y'all. So happy to be here.
Yeah. Yay, we're happy to have you, and congratulations on your master's, girl.
Hallelujah. Thank you. I'm so happy to be done. God is on the throne.
I'll be there one day, guys.
Yes, or maybe you will. In a different, completely type of way, which might be better, honestly.
You're such an inclusionist. Like, what is going on?
It's not all about the masses. Sorry, I just gotta...
Okay. Well, we have a series of questions for you. And so I'm going to start off with our first question. You have a platform, an intentional platform entitled Sped Street, and I want to know what inspired Sped Street, and if you could tell our listeners what it is.
Okay, yeah, perfect. Well, first of all, the name Sped Street is because when I first started as a special education teacher, my partner teacher, shout out to you, Tiffany, if you're listening, used to say, oh, you know, just come on to Sped Street because all the special education rooms are on the same row in our school. And she'd be like, oh, everybody just come on Sped Street, this, that, and the third. And it just, I love the name. And Sped Street is a podcast for parents, persons who work with persons with special needs. And the reality is that I had a lot of parents that have questions and no information. They don't have the resources and the money to go to these specialists and spend $100 an hour to get told certain things. They're relying on the internet, which has all types of myths, and they don't know what's going on. And they just really felt pushed through the system. And in addition, therapists, other people that work with persons with special needs really needed new, I think, insight. And I really wanted to provide a place that served as a bridge for others. Also, I would go out and see people who stared at persons with special needs. And I just felt there was a disconnect in our society. So that's why I call this Sped Street, and that is its function as a podcast.
I love that. I really particularly like your focus towards parents, because I think me and Jihad oftentimes in our personal conversations talk about how sometimes the school system is intentionally not transparent with parents. So that's why I really enjoyed that aspect of Sped Street.
Thank you. Yeah, I am. Parents are just left in the dark a lot. And so I wasn't down with that. So I was like, there has to be something that they can access for free, you know? So
yeah,
that's kind of how it was birthed.
Oh, and you made a change. I love it.
Yes. And so, Sharia, what is person first language?
So person first language is basically putting the identity before the diagnosis. So, how many times when you're out, would you say, you know, oh, do you know Jihad? He's the black guy. Rather than, do you know Jihad? He's a young man who does this, that, and the third, works in this type of environment, went to school here. Oh, and he might be black. And I think it's the way that you say things. You're identifying someone and boxing them in by your single introduction or identifying factor. So person first language is putting the person before the label. So instead of saying the autistic child, you'll say the child with autism, the girl with Down syndrome, the boy with ADHD. And so you're giving, even if you are identifying them in that moment for a professional purpose, you're still giving them some type of identity and a voice. You're giving them a name before you ever speak that, you know?
Exactly. And you know, when you said that, it literally took me to like college athletes, or like how maybe a lot of people may make assumptions about, oh, okay, like, is that black man an athlete? And they'll go directly to them and say, oh, what sport do you play?
Right.
So I do really,
I'll say the color's blue, like what?
Right.
Exactly. What?
Exactly.
Not my favorite. Right, it's a mess.
I have a follow-up question to that, though. It just popped in my head. Do you teach, I think your babies are young, but I mean, you can't just say that young people can't do stuff, but do you find yourself explaining to your students with needs, like the importance of person-first language, you know, in terms of...
Absolutely. So okay. My kids are pretty young. I teach kids ages 3 to 5. Sometimes 6, depending on when their birthday is. And so some of them may not cognitively understand what I'm saying, but I do not allow in my room, I don't allow my children to live by their label in my room. So they might not even know what they have messing with me, because we don't even bring certain things up, because I believe in the power of the tongue. I believe that you have what you speak. Mm-hmm. And if you believe that you have a limitation, then you're going to stop reaching for what you have to do. So we do affirmations in my room. We speak truth to power. I mean, I'm not tolerating certain mindsets in my room. So I do educate them, the ones who are older, but I feel like that type of education, as far as the language to use, really goes into the kids who are much older, high school age, middle school age. But my kids, we might touch on it. My older kids, as they're going into general education for inclusion, but mostly we're fighting against that label in general, in the sense of, you know, you're gonna soar above regardless.
Right.
Mm. Mindset shifts. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if I'm remembering correctly, your master's, you have a concentration in autism.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. So what is autism spectrum disorder, mm-hmm. especially for our listeners who may not know or may have like just a partial idea of what it is?
Right. So autism spectrum disorder is a sensory but really developmental disorder that affects persons usually as early as 18 months, but it's usually identified around 3 or 4. And it affects your mental processes, your communication, and your socialization, which ultimately affects your quality of life, your academia, your relationship with your parents, your ability to express and receive love. All of that is affected. It's the word spectrum in the middle is important to emphasize, because spectrum is giving you the little range of what it can be. You can have someone who is extremely low on the spectrum, and there's no spectrum numbers. There's no like, oh, you know, blue is this, yellow is that. Like, there's no like, that is not what's going on. It's just there's an extreme on each end, and then some people fall in between. Some kids are very smart. Their disorder may be virtually undetectable, and then you have children who are extremely low, stemming, tantruming, can't be in public, don't like lights, you know, like you have all over the place. And so that word's spectrum disorder.
That is, especially as an educator, I know like there are oftentimes, I used to joke about it, but now I'm like more serious. I'm like, oh, I believe he's on the spectrum.
Listen.
But now I get it more, because I was like, I'm thinking spectrum, I'm relating it to continuum, not relating it to the fact that it's ASD, autism spectrum disorder.
Yes.
Ooh. Ignorance be everywhere.
It really does. But, and I really do be thinking about like my kid also. Like, I had a student my first year in the classroom, and he definitely was, you know, someone who was very personable. Mm-hmm. But when he tantrumed, he would tantrum, and it would be.
Yeah, he tore it up.
Exactly. And so, like, trying to find that happy medium to where he was able to be like, oh, okay, like, you know what, this is what works for me.
Yeah.
Was definitely a process. But I think that that's what you have to be able to realize is it's a process, and you have to be patient with their process, and you got to be patient with yourself to understand who they are.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, and I feel like I really led you on to this, honestly, Sheree, in a perfect way. Like, do you think that there are like different levels or degrees of autism?
Yes. Wow, that is such a loaded question. But my very short answer is yes. And I'm gonna try not to be too long-winded on my branch out. But okay, so there's levels and degrees by definition, because we talked about the word spectrum, right? So there's already gonna be varying levels on that. But speaking more personally to the function of their behavior, why they do something, will tell you a lot about what you're working with. So what I mean by that is the kid who was having the tantrum in your class and he was tearing stuff up. So if it would have been me, I would have done a behavior intervention plan for him. But before I did that, I would have done an ABC data chart, which is an antecedent behavior and consequence behavior chart. And I would have sat down with him, and I would have looked at him for the period of time he's in your class. What happened before he had the tantrum? What was he doing during it? And what happened immediately afterwards? Because a lot of times we don't understand that their function of behavior is either going to be to get away from something or to get something every single time. And so what you're doing in the consequence part is going to dictate how often the tantrum happens. And I think a lot of people lose that. And so the severity of those things tell me a lot about where they are on the spectrum, right? Because a typical child is not going to bite you for you to leave the room. Okay.
Right.
Now they might leave the room. They might curse at you. They might whatever. Because the way these kids set up now, Lord Jesus. But and there's another conversation for another day. But there are levels to that, even in that. So I want to touch on that piece. But yes, I do believe there's levels. There are children that are very low on the spectrum. And they engage in something called stimming. And stims are something that you will see somebody do over and over and over again. I had a kid whose stim was to slap the table. I had a kid whose stim was to like shake his left leg over and over again when he would sit down. It's something that they focus on, and it happens all the time. And that's a pretty low level, because when it's happening, you know that either they're thinking hard, they're about to get upset. It's a tell, almost like when you play poker. Like, something's going on. Right. They're not doing it all hours of the day. Something's happened. So you have kids with stims. You have persons who grow up and grow through the spectrum. Just because you start low on the spectrum doesn't mean you end low on the spectrum. You have kids who grow through the spectrum and say their first word at 8 and become scientists at 18 and, you know, whatever else. You have persons who live in assisted living facilities as adults. You have persons who can't live in assisted facilities because they cannot understand the basics of adulthood, so they have to stay with a family member. And then you have persons who are so low that they may not ever speak. They might tantrum their entire life. They seem to have hit a plateau in their growth. And so I definitely think there's levels to it. But in addition to that, there are issues with the levels too that people attribute to different things because they're frustrated. And here's what I mean. You have persons who might say, you know, my child was so much higher, and then we went to this place or we were around this person and they just regressed there. They got a vaccines is a famous one. Vaccinations are the reason why persons got autism. And you know, what's interesting to me about that claim is that vaccinations usually start taking place at an age where you would recognize it anyway, right? So you may not have recognized it before. And I don't believe vaccines have nothing to do with autism. And that's also another conversation. But I believe that when you start getting vaccinated, that's the age of detection anyway. So how you know that's what it was? We don't know that. And so people blame things like that on the spectrum, and they might box their kid in based on that. And then you also have something called Asperger's disease, which is the highest level of autism. Actually, they have taken Asperger's and made it a separate label now than autism.
That's, yeah, I did think that. Yeah,
they took it out of the spectrum, so it's a whole different disorder. And but it used to be the highest level of autism, and it's basically when a person is very functional, can move as an adult, but is might be socially awkward, might have a very obsessive tendencies. And what I mean by that is like, they might perseverate on, and sorry, when I say the word perseverate, I mean like, means to extremely focus on something, like to be obsessive, right? So they might perseverate on cars. That might be their jam. And they need a car bedroom. They need a car keychain. They need a car this, like everything has to be that. And so that is often a tell, but they're typically socially awkward and may not lead a typical adult life due to their disease, but they're typically very smart. And well able, but they're just lower on that sensory scale with affection and things like that.
So my first real experience that I could remember with someone with special needs, he had Asperger's, or he has Asperger's, and his name was Philippe. And I've always been the person that I am. So Lord. I was a little worse in middle school, and I was just like, you know, we used to argue. We really poor used Philippe. To argue.
If poor you're me. Listening, goodness.
Okay, but also poor no. me at the time. but it was crazy because we would argue, but like we were friends, and nobody was gonna mess with Philippe. Right. If I'm like, I can argue with Philippe, but like we also he lived like around the corner from me. His brother played football with my brother. So we like had a relationship, and it was so interesting to later on learn that like what Asperger's means. I think somebody might've told me that he had it, but I don't know what that means. Philippe is, you know, right. my friend that I argue with in exactly. public spaces.
public spaces.
And he perseverated.
There you go. That word. There you go.
he perseverated on like fixing things. And so he was always outside fixing his bike.
That was his jam.
I'm surprised you didn't tell the story, because that story I love.
What story?
You just did a good like reenactment of your childhood when you used to roll up and be like, "Hey, Philippe."
I really used to roll up on him around the corner. And he'd be like, "What do you want? What do you want?"
I love him.
And I'd be like, "What you want?" But then want to talk to me for 30 minutes. Okay, Philippe.
She said, "My friend that I argue with in public spaces. Y'all need to get my sis a television show." She gets.
We might. Okay. You also mentioned something. I know all the anti-vaxxers who listen.
Okay, I don't care. And I'm ready for the fight. Okay.
Yes. But you said something about vaccinations and how, like, usually kids get vaccinations around the age of, like, they get one of them around the age of detection anyway. So, but then that leads me to the question of how is autism spectrum disorder diagnosed?
Right. So, when I say age of detection, I'm talking 18 months to 5 years is typically the ages that you start noticing differences. And it is diagnosed completely on a referral basis. And what I mean is like, no one is going to go up to your child and suggest that they get a test done. You as the parent have to initiate right. or the guardian have to say, you know what? They're not playing with others. He's head banging all the time. He doesn't want me to hug him. Every time I turn the lights, he cries. I think something's going on, and you have to initiate that process. Typically, you can go to a hospital and get diagnosed by a diagnostician in that arena, but also diagnosticians in the school setting can diagnose your child as well. And just because you go to a diagnostician at your local public school does not mean they have to go to public school. But that is a service that is offered to families that have children with special needs. You can go and get diagnosed and get a recommendation and have a meeting, and you never have to go to school a day in your life, but you can know. So that's that. Now, the diagnostician does different tests like the CARS or the ADOS test, which we will not go into because that is a whole separate situation. That's not very interesting to me. Assessments are boring, but those are some of the titles that they'll have. And there's like, it's basically a test of questions and responses, because at that age, what can you give them? A written test? No. So it's a verbal test, and it's a fluid test. It's a lifestyle type test. We're just existing, right? I'm just in your space, and I'm observing you, and I'm asking you questions and seeing how you respond. And the measures that they look at is cognition, academic awareness, communication skill, and socialization. And so once those things are decided, if you're high or you're low on the scale, if you're high on some scales, low on others, will let the diagnostician know what to give you for your autism predictability. And then if you are a certain age, like, they really don't like to diagnose until the age of 4. Three is the age you can get measured. 18 months is just, it's highly too early to me. You don't know what your child got going on at 18. We barely started talking. Like, that's just way too early. But 3 is, like, solid. 3 is solid. You should have a certain amount of words by 3. You're a year away from pre-K. That's solid. But at 3, if they measure your child and they feel, and the school system feels like they do have autism, then they typically give them a rating of NCC, which is non-categorical early child, which is basically like, we don't know what they got, but we suspect they got autism. But we're going to say NCEC autism on the paperwork. So we suspect. But if at the year of 4, your child doing what they do, then we're going to take the NCEC off. So then it's a way for them to never have been labeled, kind of. So that's that. And then, that's how this diagnosis goes.
And it's interesting that you brought up the NCEC, because I feel like we don't really talk about the, like, categorization of preschool students and, like, how early a student can be identified as having special needs, or trying to figure out what supports that they need so that they can, like you said, it's a spectrum. So it's something that they can potentially grow out of, or they can be more high functioning and things of that nature. And so do you think that it's more common in a particular type of sex or race as far as autism goes?
Okay, so I used to think that it really impacted minorities more. There's no evidence saying that minorities are impacted more or less than our Anglo-Saxon counterparts. What there is to be said is that minorities are diagnosed later and less frequently than our Anglo-Saxon counterparts. Which basically means
we love to hear.
I'm just trying to be official here. Which basically means that we don't have the resources. That's what that means. We don't have the resources to go through and get tested. Mama and daddy both work all day. So when exactly do you expect them to take off for their child to go get tested? I'm not going to take my child up there at 3 because they're going to be labeled special education and they're not going to get the real skills and they're going to be taught how to fold clothes in school instead of ABCs, and I don't want that. And it's a whole lot of miseducation going on. So I saw that most prevalent. Before I became a special education teacher, I was an ABA therapist and I worked at a autism clinic. And it was an autism clinic, but we had, like, some kids with Down syndrome as well. So we had a range of disabilities, but these kids didn't go to school. We were their school. They came to our clinic every day from 8 to 4. They had one therapist they worked with every day. They had goals we worked on, and we rolled. Most of those persons in that facility that could afford that type of service were Anglo-Saxon. Or I had some Indian patients. I had 2 African-American patients and maybe some Hispanic patients, but those persons these are people with great insurance. Great insurance. And they can afford to put that type of program. I'm not even going to tell y'all how much it costs. But whatever you pay in rent, triple that and pay it per week. Okay, those type of programs ain't no joke. It's not a joke. Wow. And they have the resources. And some of these children made such astronomical progress. They went to public school within a year. And yes. So I saw the system at work. I'm like, wow, if you have resources, you can get better interventions. But if you don't have resources, you're going to public school. And you better pray you have a teacher who gives 2 craps about your child. I can't say if it's more prevalent one way or the other in a race, but I can tell you that resources are different. I can also say that I have had very few female students. Very, very. Ooh. In fact, I've had 2.
I'm sorry, you got us thinking.
Right, I'm like, dang, I don't think I've had any students, any girls labeled as autistic.
I'm also trying to think of, like, movies that I've watched. I Am Sam. Like, documentaries.
Boys are statistically 4 times more likely to be diagnosed than a girl. Especially needs. I've had girls who have had Down syndrome, ADHD, ED. As far as autism, I have had 2 students total. And when I was at my facility, I think there one of which had Asperger's for sure. For sure. But yeah. Yep. I can't tell you boys get it more likely, but as far as racial, I think it goes across socioeconomic and racial status, but I can tell you that the resources you have is that's a whole different conversation.
Right. And speaking about those resources, because I think that earlier towards the beginning of the conversation, we were talking about consequences and trying to identify what students who are on the spectrum need. And so I'm curious to know, like, how does this all play out in the classroom for students who is on the spectrum?
All right. So you want me to start with behavior first? You want me to start with the juicy stuff first?
Yeah, I think that would be the best approach, because I feel like that's what people are clearly able to see if they're like in the classroom or if they're walking by a classroom.
Okay, so I'll start off with what we learned, and then I'll tell you about the behavior piece. So the things that we learn in class are different than a typical pre-K class and kindergarten class, because I'm teaching everything. I'm potty training most of my students. Fun fact, yeah. I am potty training all day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so fun. It's so fun. I'm potty training most of my students, so there's that. I am, in addition to potty training most of my students, I'm teaching you how to play. It is not a skill to know how to play. That is a privilege to be born and know how to play. So they are eating the toys. Mm-hmm. They are hitting people who take things from them because they don't understand the purpose of sharing. The train goes around the track and you're supposed to pass it to your friend and you don't understand that. Why am I playing? Am I supposed to be having fun? How does this work? So we teach that. I'm teaching you how to eat at a table. I'm teaching you how to act in the nurse's office and not run around. So I'm teaching you how to walk in the hallway and be quiet. And when I say teaching, I mean teaching, not just, we're walking to the bathroom, so we're going to take a moment. No, we have a whole section of class dedicated to walking up and down the hallway and getting an M&M at each stop, because this is how you walk in the hallway. So those are some of the things that we're teaching, in addition to academics, in addition to reading, writing, math, science, all of it. Okay, now with that being said, the way that I teach is a lot of hand over hand type stuff. Like, I'll put my hand over yours and help you do it so that you're touching it and you're seeing how to do it. And then you'll repeat after me. A lot of repetition. If you are ever in my classroom on a Monday, you already know what we're doing Tuesday and Wednesday, because we're doing the same thing, to be repetitive with them. We just going to be doing it every day. We sing the same song in the morning that we sing the same song in the afternoon. We do all the same dances, because they have to get these skills. And so all of these things are things that we're doing. And some of the ways that behavior is reinforced after I show you and we're working on how to do these things is we have like token boards for students who are a little bit like more rowdy, and or they may have a BIP, which is a behavior intervention plan. And they get a token on a DRO. So they're on like a direct reinforcement operational schedule, which means that every 3 minutes that the alarm goes off and you haven't hit me, you get a token. Every 3 minutes the alarm goes off and you haven't ran around my room, you get a token. You get 10 tokens. Girl, we are
3 minutes.
Let me tell you, I have worked in 5 second increments before, and I'm not playing. You have to start I am not playing.
What?
You have to start so small. And I'm not doing 5 seconds for 6 weeks. I'm doing 5 seconds maybe for a day or two. And it's like, okay, for this 10 minutes, we're working. Every 5 seconds, you sat at this table. Here you go, baby. Here, boom, 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 boom. And then the next day, we'll do 10 seconds. And then by the end of the week, we're up to 30 seconds. And the next week, we're up to 5 minutes. And the week after that, we're up to 10 minutes. And then the weeks after that, we're up to a full class. So you have to start off so small for them to understand the concept. Oh, I'm good. I get something. Oh, that alarm goes off. I'll get a high five. Oh, I sat here for 5 minutes. Oh, I can run around for a minute. This works. I'm not getting yelled at. I could do that. So those are some of the things that we're working on with them. Now, to speak to behavior, what I don't tolerate, so I tell all my kids, they're grown. They enter my classroom at 3, and I tell them that they're adults. And I'm going to treat them like adults. I don't treat them like kids. I don't Google God them. I don't baby this, that. You are an adult. You have bills. You pay rent in this room, okay? Your bills that you pay is the work that you do. The rent that you pay is the price that you pay when you want to go play and do all that stuff. You got to pay your rent every day. Your job, then you can go. You paid your rent for the day. If somebody else is crying and hitting, that ain't your house. You don't pay rent at that person's house. That ain't your business. My kids are very mature for their age because I'm not doing the things that the world is not going to do to you. I love you. I care about you. But this is not, no, the world is dog eat dog, and I want you to survive. So we are going to have a realistic expectation in my room. And I love you. I care about you. My kids curl up under me all the time. We hug, all that kind of stuff. But I do not baby them. So with that being said, I do have kids that have tantrums. A kid that used to spider monkey me. And I'm not playing when I say that. Used to jump on me and grab my neck and like climb up my body to try to hit me. Okay. I've had such fun. Such fun.
I don't have it in there. No.
Students who have bitten me. Patients at the clinic who you have to use the suit up before you went in their room because they're going to attack you. These are the things that we dealt with. So speaking to the school system, every educator, if you're listening, if you are a special educator, you need to go get your CPI certification. You hear me? Because what you're not going to do is abuse me. And I tell my kids that. You're not going to abuse me. Okay. Some time to get your life together, and I understand a slip up. But you think I'm about to come in here every day and be scared of you? I'm not. So the kid that used to spider monkey me, would get very surprised when I used to come back at him, because I had the documentation to do so. I had the blue card to do so, and I used to tell him, "You want to fight today?
Exactly.
Then we can fight today. If that's what you want to do, that's your business. It's your house. I'm living in it. But you gonna there are decisions that we're gonna have consequences to. So if he put his hands on me, we had code words because. I'd be like, get the kids out of here. Because he wouldn't just spider monkey me. He would throw things across the room. He would hurt other students. Oh, yeah. No, he would. Of course, he's like my favorite because I love the troublemakers. But he used to be on 1,000. And we had a code word. I would ask my teacher assistants in my room, hey, can you take the kids to Jumba Juice? And she would evacuate the room because I never wanted to give him the satisfaction of knowing that you got me in a panic. So once the kids are evacuated, I take my shoes off. I take my badge off. I take my... Because you're not going to snatch nothing. You're not going to snatch nothing. You're just not going to do it. And that's that. So then we go to work. You know, we do the CPI training. I simply give my children the problems they ask for. If you ask for these problems, I'm here to provide that for you. I'm here to provide whatever you ask for. You hear me? I am here to do whatever it is you need me to do. And if problems is what you want, I can also give you those. So we go to work with that. Once that's done, we review what they did, what the problem is. They engage in a consequence, and we come right back to work to the school day. I do not dwell on bad moments. I don't, because I used to, especially when they would literally. I used to have to go to the nurse and get wrapped up. Like I used to really be like, "Do you see what you did to me?" And like 5 o'clock in the afternoon, like, let's hear what. But now I'm like, you know what? We can dwell on that all day, but half the time when they were doing it, did they really understand what was going on? Probably not. My kids were blacking out. They were blacking out. Eyes were red, screaming at the top of their lungs. They don't know what's going on. And I mean, were you really present in your body in that moment? You couldn't have been to think that you can take on a 5'8" black woman. There's no way that you were present in your body, right? You're not. So it's like, we could dwell, but you've done your time. You've paid your time. And we're going to move on. So that's one thing. My room has very clear invisible rules and expectations. So hide my rules and expectations. We go over them every morning. We're accountable. If you're not following a rule, then there's consequences for that. And you understand what those are because those are also posted. We use PEC systems to get around in my room. So we have pictures of the stations that we're going to be at. And so we go match the pictures to the station. Exactly what your schedule looks like because you see it. And we're up front. We work with timers. Timer goes off. You know what to do. You hear me? We are moving.
Exactly.
Everything is moving. Yes. Your room should be able to run itself if you're not there. Literally, everything is moving. And then the biggest thing that helps with behavior is parents if I don't have parent support, which sometimes I do not, to be clear, it makes it 10 times more difficult to get done what I need to get done. Making excuses for your child is not helping me. Babying your child is not helping me. Me teaching them how to the table, but they you still breastfeeding them at four is not helping me. You, and we can talk about that another time too. Jesus Christ. Help your children. you letting your children wear Pampers at home, but I'm probably training them at school is not helping me. Your child hits you, you giving them attention when they hit you, when I just told you what we're going to try to do is not helping me. And I don't blame parents. I'm not a parent. I can't imagine coming home and having to take care of my child when I get home and I'm tired. So I get it. But yeah, you got to work with me here, especially if you want to see results. So that's kind of how it runs. That's kind of how we do it. And I just don't tolerate less than the best for my kids. Every action has a consequence, good or bad, in my room. And we function like the real world. You come into work, you do your job, you go home. If you don't do your job, there's consequences for not doing your job. So just kind of how I run it.
You are so great. I'm just soaking everything up. Jahad just tapped me because he's like, are you reading the next question? Because I'm literally sitting here just like so engaged. It also just reminds me of my mentor, who I need to connect you with via email, by the way. But I was I had a session with her yesterday, and she was talking about, I had my kids like type in the chat box during our Zoom call. And I was giving them verbal feedback. I was like, no, Jaylen, you have to capitalize the I, like go back and rewrite it. So she was telling me, she's like, you know, I think it would be better for you not to do the correction like live in front of everybody. So it's hard for me though. And I told her because I'm just like, I might be projecting some of myself on them, right? Just being transparent because I'm a confident person and like, I don't mind being addressed in public. But it's also like, I feel like I've created a culture within my classroom where like, oh, that's just normal. Like Miss Black is going to like correct me and then we're going to move forward. And I just feel like I felt like if I don't give you an opportunity to like understand that you can be vulnerable in situations around other people, then how are you going to grow to that point? Right. Hmm. But she just provided a good perspective, and it wasn't anything new that, but sometimes, you know, when you hear different information later on in life, it just clicks different. But she was just like, you know, I think that I just think from, you know, in a very inclusive scenario, everybody's not developmentally the same. Everybody's not emotionally the same. And so even if that is the culture of the classroom, just because that's the culture of your classroom and you've been teaching them for 3 years, because I have, that doesn't mean that someone doesn't feel some type of way, because learning is a social constructivist situation. Mm-hmm. It'd be different if just me one-on-one or me and you and your best friend. But because we're in like a large group, there's just so many things to be mindful of. And I just had that type of moment with you talking. And it's like, we really have to be super aware, super cognizant of like how you're coming off. And making sure like you're being inclusive and acknowledging that there are other types of learners throughout the whole year. They don't just change because you change the culture of your classroom. So I just had that like realization moment as a teacher. And I'm just wondering what other type of essential tips would you give another teacher or a parent around working with students or living with students or people.
There's one thing I can tell anybody, parents, teachers, therapists, anybody, and you're working with a child on the spectrum, is that do not close your mind to the possibilities for that child. Because if you believe that they can't do something, they're going to reflect your belief. There's a song by Erykah Badu called Orange Moon. I don't know if y'all are Erykah fans. But, hey.
Yeah, girl, hold up, sis. We was on the Erykah
versus Jill Scott. I've been listening to that playlist. Nah, stop. Anyway, Erykah did. She's amazing in concert. I just want to say that. Anyway, she did a song called Orange Moon. And the lyrics are like, I'm an orange moon reflecting the light of the sun. But she's talking about how she reflects her partner, like who she is. who she's with is how bright she shines. Like, she can't shine brighter than the person that she's with. And his energy is reflected upon her. And wow. I, to say that your children are literally an orange moon in that sense. They can only do what you set them up to do. And if you put them in a box and you tell them the most they'll ever be able to do is fold clothes and sit down, that's exactly what they're going to do. But if you tell them that they can count and say their numbers and letters and they can be a society, they can do certain jobs and they can this, that, and the third, they can do it. And I think that people limit with their energy, with their words. Mm. Or if you tell me, Sharia, you can be a scientist, but you never give me the tools to be a scientist, did you really believe in me? Or are you just saying what sounds good? I think parents have to really, and teachers, and for that matter, anybody, have to truly believe they can do something. Do you believe they can do it? If you are trying to teach them to be potty trained and they're 6 years old, and you literally huff and puff every time they pee on themselves. Do you really believe that? Do you believe they can do it? Or are you just saying what you got to say to get through your appraisal meeting? Like, what's your goal here? And so I think that if we set higher goals for our students, I was at a college graduation, and part of the graduation, they had a whole separate with autism to graduate college and have a guaranteed job after school. And they walk the stage. Of course, I am an emotional mess, first of all. I'm like, they hadn't even called my homegirl's name yet. And I opened up my program and I saw their names and I am like heaving, like I cannot breathe in the thing. And to see them walk the stage and everybody, the whole stadium went quiet, of course, because they have sensory issues. So they asked everybody to be quiet and they walked and they were so proud. And I'm like, your parents, somebody believed in you for you to get to this point. Who would have thought you would have a job and a degree and be able to walk in a public space without running? Be able to, you know, who would have thought that you would have achieved this? Somebody believed in you. Parents and educators need to take the box off of our kids and let them decide how far they want to go. It's not up to you. And that would be my biggest piece of advice, that anything is possible and you have to really believe that.
Oh, wow.
That hit deep. Especially the orange moon. I'm like, wow.
I'm still stuck on orange moon. Thank you. Thank you so much, Shreya. You have been like, I never doubted you, but you just surpassed my expectations in terms of like how informative you are and how like smooth, like everyone's going to be able to understand everything. I just love it, all of it. And then especially as a general educator, like I was just sitting here going through a very super reflective process and you just gave us an opportunity. I feel like I speak for Jihad too, even though I'm working on that. You just gave us an opportunity to showcase that we too are lifelong learners. Thank you. Shout out to you and shout out to Sped Street. And
absolutely. So Sped Street's available on your favorite podcast platform, whatever that may be. Just type in Sped Street. You can also contact me via email, spedstreetpodcast@gmail.com with any questions you have. If you have questions after this episode, I am available. And my social media handles are just Sharia Hill. I'm not fancy. I used to be fancy. It used to be Queen of the Hill because that was kind of dope. But then I was like, you know what? I'm gonna grow up a little bit. So all my social media handles are just at Sharia Hill. Send me a DM. Let me know you listen. If you have any questions, I'm available to answer those. And I just thank y'all so much for inviting me on this space, for seeing me in this space, and for us being able to honor each other as educators. This has been great.
Super great.
Yes, thank you so much. We really do appreciate you and for like all the work that you do, because starting out in ABA therapy and now you mastered and still doing work like it. Thank you for you being thank you in all the ways. Like, our kids really do need you.
Thank you
really
so much.
I realize that.
All right, y'all. Y'all have an awesome day.
All right, Boo. It's been a pleasure. Whew, that was amazing. A huge thank you to our friend and teacher bae and fellow Howard alum, Sharia Hill, for coming onto the Reformist Pipeline and enlightening us about ASD. We are lifelong learners, so we recognize every opportunity as an opportunity for us to learn, especially when we have guests come onto our show.
As the Reformist Pipeline continues to influence our listeners to become advocates, we recognize that we are not the only platform doing this work. Shreya and her platform, Sped Street, are great sources of information for those interested in evoking change in the education system. And we, Jihad and Lindsay, will be featured on a couple of Sped Street episodes to come.
Exciting! The call to action is to stay in touch with our partner, Shreya, over on Sped Street. Get it? Funny.
I love that.
Go listen on your favorite platform, subscribe to her on Apple Podcasts, or you can follow Shreya on her page for any updates. If you haven't already, you can also follow us, me and Hadi, at Hadi Had, that's the at sign, H-A-D-Y-H-A-D. Or you can follow Lens, that's myself, at sign, M-A-M-A-L-I-N-D-S-2-2. And don't forget to check in on yourself. We've been in this quarantine state for almost a quarter of the year now, y'all.
Wow.
And we want everyone to come out on the other side when all of this is over. So thank you for listening. Please stay safe. Check in with yourself.
Peace, love, and light.
Hootie hoo!